This show is supported by State Farm. You have insurance for your home, your health, and your car. Why don't you have insurance for your small business? So many small business owners think they don't need or don't even know about small business insurance. Protecting a source of revenue is one thing, but so is protecting all of your hard work and your team members. State Farm agents are all small business owners too, so they know how to help small business owners choose personalized policies that fit their budgets. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Money Pit is presented by Lumber Liquidators, Quicken Loans, Home Advisor, and Arrow Fasteners. Now, here are Tom and Leslie.
Coast to coast and floorboards to shingles, this is the Money Pit Podcast. I'm Tom Kreitler.
And I'm Leslie Segretti.
And happy spring. What's on your to-do list? If it's a home improvement project, we would love to help you take the first step to get that done. And you can participate by calling us at 888-MONEYPIT. Doesn't matter what hour of the day you're listening to this show, you can reach us 24/7 at 1-888-666-3974. If we're not in the studio, we'll call you back the next time we are. Coming up on today's show, now that spring has officially sprung, unofficially, it still might be a bit nippy where you are. But soon, you are going to want to enjoy the outdoors on your beautiful new deck. What? After a hard winter, your deck is not looking so beautiful? Well, we can fix that. We'll have a quick recipe for a sparkling clean finish just ahead.
That's right. You know, everything starts to just look a little bit yucky after the winter season, but there's a great way to get it back, and we'll share that with you. And another thing is a beautiful, lush, green lawn.
Definitely a sign of spring.
That definitely is a sign of spring, and it certainly makes you want to go out and get outside. But one thing you've got to get rid of, and we're talking about weeds, we're going to have step-by-step tips on how you can get rid of all of that unwanted greenery and really just set your lawn up for success this season.
And how about this? Have you ever pulled out gross dishes at the end of a dishwasher cycle that remain layered with last night's dinner? Well, the problem might be the way the machine is loaded. We'll share those secrets coming up.
And this hour, we've got a very fun tool to give away. It's the iconic American-made Arrow T50 heavy-duty staple gun, along with a supply of staples, and it's worth $50. And believe me, you will use the staple gun all the time.
It's going out to one caller drawn at random. Make that you. Pick up the phone, call us right now at 1-888-MONEYPIT, or post your question to the community page at moneypit.com. Let's get to it. Leslie, who's first?
Matthew in Georgia's on the line with an issue with some hardwood flooring. What's going on?
I think the brand name is Mohawk engineered hardwood floor in my house. And I'm having some buckling raised edges where the boards meet each other at the ends. And so I was asking the builder about it, and they said that, you know, it's acceptable to have some moisture inside there because of the concrete slab foundation. Even though they use a moisture barrier and it is a glued down floor, that's still acceptable to have some moisture in there. So I was curious as to what is an acceptable amount of moisture, and should that moisture be causing the boards to buckle?
If the boards are buckling, something is not right. Those boards are not designed to be buckling. Buckling is not a normal condition of hardwood floor, of engineered hardwood floor. And if that's what you're seeing, something's wrong. What exactly the level of moisture should be in that floor, I really don't know. There's going to be a spec that the manufacturer is going to say that if the floor is more than X percent, you know, damp, don't use this product. I'll tell you, I know that engineered hardwood is popular today for these types of floors, but you're much better off with an engineered vinyl plank than engineered hardwood. First of all, it looks just like hardwood. I dare say you'd be hard-pressed to tell the difference. And the stuff is totally and completely waterproof. You're not going to have issues with swelling. And if this is a newer house and this floor was put down, I think you got a potential claim here because it certainly should not be buckling.
See, they're telling me that they're not going to do anything about it because the edges raised up are less than an eighth of an inch.
Oh, well, that's outrageous. That's outrageous, yeah. And whose standard is that, less than an eighth of an inch? An eighth of an inch buckling is okay. Are they going to give you a letter from Mohawk saying, you know what, if you put our floor down and the edges buckle up an eighth of an inch, that's no big deal. That's how we designed the product. I don't think so. How old is this house? When did you move in?
I bought it in March, and it was built in November.
Does it have a warranty on it?
Yes, it does. It has a one year warranty for things like this, for trim being out and things like that, creaky floors and stuff like that. But then that has a 10-year warranty for structural issues. And so that kind of leads into my next question for you is I'm having some issues with my yard draining. So I took a line level and I measured the grade of my yard, and it's actually a negative slope. It's about an eighth of an inch per foot back down sloping towards my foundation.
Hold on for a second here, Matthew, okay? Because you're getting away from yourself. We're going to break this
up,
okay? All right. I understand you're excited. You got a lot going on. But there's something very, very important you have to do right now.
Okay.
And that is, did you craft a letter to the builder and to the warranty company reporting all of the things that you have found wrong with this house? You've got to do that, not just notice to the builder, but you've got to notice the warranty company too. Because notice to the builder does not constitute notice to the warranty company. So you have to notice both of them before this year is up. So it sounds like you're getting very close to that now. So I want you to draft a letter, and I want you to send it certified mail, return receipt requested, to both the warranty company and the builder. Put everything in there that you suspect so that it can be proven that these claims existed before the year was up. Okay?
It seems to me like the warranty and the builder are the same entity, though. You get what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying, but there's going to be a warranty.
I have is quality builder's warranty, you know, but every time I call the warranty office, I get the builder's office, service office.
Whatever address is on that warranty and whatever address is the builder, you've got to protect yourself here by documenting that these things happen. Look, I used to do a lot of arbitrations is one of the many jobs I had sort of over the years for these warranty companies that were back in builders. And I think the warranties, for the most part, they try to sell it to you like it's a warm blanket, but I find it's a wet blanket and it really doesn't give you much coverage whatsoever. And I also have seen builders that like to be Mr. Nice Guy up until the day after that first year expires, and then they become like ghosts. You never see them again. But you need to notice them that this is a problem, and you need to demand that it be fixed. I would also, after you get done with that letter and that notification process, I would also contact Mohawk, speak to their technical service department. These are not just people that answer the phones. These are experts, and tell them what you're seeing. Send them photographs. Get their expert opinion as to whether or not this is acceptable or not, because I don't think it is. I've never heard of a flooring company that would permit an eighth inch lift of a board like that.
I'm writing all those down. So
I think it was done wrong. Okay. So write the warranty company and the builder with this and anything else you suspect is wrong with that house. And then also, once that's done and off and on the mail, send it, send it by email, send it by certified mail, just document that it's been sent.
Okay.
And then after that, talk to Mohawk simultaneously to any conversation you have with the builder and find out what their specs provide for. But I would be shocked if they told you that having an eighth inch lift on the board, because it's a tripping hazard. Somebody can get hurt on that.
Right.
Was acceptable. I don't think it is acceptable. And I think that floor has to be torn up and replaced.
I was told if they can slide a credit card over top of it and the credit card does not get stopped, then it's within tolerance.
Eighth of an inch, you can.
Yeah. Eighth of an inch would probably be about 10 credit cards.
Yeah.
So I guess going on to my second question, with the yard draining back into the foundation, could that raise the moisture levels inside the concrete slab?
Certainly, yeah, because what happens is slab's very, very absorbent, it's very hydroscopic, so if you have a lot of water that's collecting at the foundation perimeter, it could definitely raise the moisture level of the slab. Also, if you didn't have gutters that were properly installed or properly extending their downspouts away, all of those things.
The downspouts not connected.
Yep, those could all lead to additional humidity and moisture in that slab that could lead to the condition that you're seeing right now. Okay?
Awesome. Thank you so much for your help. I really do appreciate it.
You're welcome. Good luck with that. Let us know how you make out. Thanks so much for calling us at 888-MONEY-PIT.
You are listening to The Money Pit, presented by HomeAdvisor.com, where you can find top-rated home pros you can trust. Call in your home repair or your home improvement question 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 1-888-MONEY-PIT.
888-666-3974. Just ahead, it's not just for colors or whites. We're going to give you an outdoor use for your laundry detergent after this.
You live in a money pit.
This show is supported by State Farm. Insurance is a part of any solid financial plan. making sure you have the important things in life covered is one of the best ways to give yourself a little breathing room when things go awry. It's important to protect not only your business, but yourself as a business owner and all current and future team members. State Farm agents know what it takes to run and protect a small business because State Farm agents are all small business owners and they live and work in your community. So they're deeply attuned to what's happening with other small businesses in your market. If you have a small business and are interested in making sure you're protected, reach out to your local State Farm agent to learn more about what you need. They'll help you find the right policy at the right price for your business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Where home solutions live, welcome back to the Money Pit. I'm Tom Kreitler.
And I'm Leslie Segretti.
What are you working on this fine day? If it's your house, your home, your castle, you're in the right place. We'd love to chat about your project. Call us right now at 1-888-MONEYPIT, presented by Home Advisor.
And hey, we've got a great reason for you to give us a call this hour, one that is sure to keep you all happy in your DIY adventures at home. We've got up for grabs an iconic American-made Arrow T50 heavy-duty staple gun and a supply of staples. Now, this really is the most popular American-made staple gun ever. It's all chrome. It's jam resistant. It's got a powerful spring coil. You can actually see how many staples you've got in the staple viewing window, and it's all steel working parts. Now, there's so many things that you can do with the Arrow T50 stapler. I really feel like it's something that I just go to a lot, whether I'm upholstering a headboard or
it's
doing a new cushion on a chair. It's always there, and it's
like a
always
trusty friend.
And it's always the right tool for the job.
Yeah, and they've got a great section on projects on arrowfastener.com. In fact, right now they're featuring one of your favorite projects, Leslie, and that's upholstering a headboard. I know you've done that project dozens and dozens of times, and it's so easy to do with the right tools. So that's what we've got to give away this hour to one lucky caller. Make that you. Pick up the phone and give us a call right now at 1-888-MONEYPIT. That $50 prize package with the Arrow T50 heavy-duty staple gun and staples is going out to one caller drawn at random.
Orlinda in Nevada, you've got the Money Pit. What can we do for you today?
I bought a house in Nevada in Henderson, and slowly but surely I have been plugging up all the areas for draft that's coming in. And then I realized, because I have a sofa in front of this fireplace, so a gas fireplace, there is a huge draft coming out that was just hitting my ankle. So I would like to know, what is it that I can do to cover that draft? Do I have to cover up the whole fireplace? Is there, you know, I have no idea what to do.
Yeah. Well, you've got to have a damper. So there's lots of different types of dampers. You probably have a damper already. There could be a mechanical damper right above the firebox. There could be a flue damper up towards the top of the flue. Or you could just put glass doors on the fireplace. That's another way to kind of slow down the
drafts. Even with the glass doors, if that flue is open, you can still feel a little bit of a draft. Because we have that. And I notice that if I forget to close the flue, then I'm like, oh, it's time to close it.
I will look to see about the damper, see if there's anything I can close. But if I close that damper and I still have a draft, and I do need to put a glass there, a glass cover, where do you find a glass cover?
Glass fireplace doors are widely available pretty much everywhere. So
I mean, we had ours done from like the local hearth place. I believe it was called like Hearth and Leisure. There's probably somebody right in your area, you know, right near Henderson. I know that area of Vegas and in Nevada, and that's a good spot. You probably have somebody there already that can do this for you. And there's so many choices and so many finishes and different designs on the glass and different framework and, you know, all different price ranges as well. So don't be surprised when some are really expensive. But it's beautiful. And it also, when you're running your gas fireplace, you can keep those closed, and it really does generate quite a lot of heat.
It does. I just didn't think that they would. I mean, I have it blocked with my sofa. I don't really use a fireplace at all.
Oh, my gosh. Gas fireplaces are so cozy.
Well, the real one. See, I'm used to the real thing.
No, I hear you. I'm all for a wood-burning fireplace, but our neighbors have a gas fireplace, and anytime we go visit them, it gets downright warm, in fact, hot in their living room. It's lovely.
Okay. I will try it.
All right. Good luck with that project. Thanks so much for calling us at 888-MONEYPIT.
Well, as the weather gets warmer, it's a good time to get outside and clean up your wooden deck. Now, it's really a quick and easy project that you're going to do with some things you probably already have around the house. I'm talking about a mixture of powdered laundry detergent and hot water. I'm sure you've got all of that. And that's going to act really as both an abrasive and a cleanser.
Yep. And if you want to eliminate mildew, just use a 10% bleach solution. You want to spray it on and then rinse it with a pressure washer. Set in a gentle cycle. Otherwise, you'll destroy those boards in the process. And as a result, you'll end up with a very super bright and cheery summer deck.
Russell in Texas is on the line with a flooring question. How can we help you today?
Hi. We're doing a remodel of a about 35-year-old house with a slab floor. And we've noticed the current flooring, we have moisture problems, like underneath our bed where we store plastic boxes and wooden foot lockers. Moisture will accumulate on the bottom of those things and deteriorates the carpet. Also, okay. In the kitchen and bathrooms, the linoleum will show some discoloration, like there's moisture coming up. So we wanted to know, before we put down some nice wood, engineered wood flooring on our slab, what should we do to prevent the moisture from coming up? Is that a right approach?
Yeah, well, a couple of things come to mind. First of all, in terms of reducing the amount of moisture the slab is subjected to, that's going to start outside the house. So I want you to make absolutely certain that you have continuous gutters at all of the roof eaves so that you're collecting the water that's coming off the roof. And I want you to also make sure that those downspouts are discharging at least 6 feet from the house, because the idea here is that if we can keep the area right around the foundation perimeter as dry as possible, that first 4 feet or so away from the house, that's going to mean you're going to have a lot less water that gets pulled in through that slab, because the slabs are very hydroscopic. They're like magnets. They suck that water in and it just sort of wicks its way up through the concrete and can end up even in the middle of the house under the floor and causing these sorts of issues. So we do want to see you dry out or as much as possible. In terms of flooring choices, since you do have these humidity issues and these moisture issues, I would suggest perhaps a different direction than engineered floor. Certainly engineered floor is okay in damp locations, but you might want to look at some of the new vinyl products that are out there. And I know you're thinking, vinyl, you know, I really don't want vinyl. Vinyl is like what I grew up with. That's like my grandmother's vinyl. You know, it's not like that anymore. It's absolutely gorgeous, and it looks just like the hardwood that you are trying to accomplish. There's two types of vinyl. One's called LVP, luxury vinyl plank, and the other one's called EVP, or engineered vinyl plank. You'll find that the engineered plank pretty much works anywhere. It's a bit stiffer than the luxury vinyl.
Well, it's built like
plank.
An engineered hardwood would be.
Right, it's like engineered hardwood, but
yeah,
it's a vinyl surface.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really durable stuff. And if you have these kinds of moisture issues, I think it would be really a good option for you to look at. You know, pretty affordable, pretty easy to install, and we'll have the dampness and the humidity will have absolutely no effect on it.
Okay, well, we've checked out some of the vinyl, and we're open to that. I mean, I certainly don't want to put down a wood floor that's going to be ruined by this, so we want to, you know, put down the right flooring. But it seems like they've offered us two options. You can either have a floating floor with like a little pad underneath, or you can have it glued down. Now, I think I prefer the glued down, because you don't hear that little, you know, you kind of hear the hollow of the floor as you walk across it when it's floating, and I don't like that. But I'm concerned, but I want to make sure that I can seal that floor to keep the adhesive from coming up if moisture gets up in there. What do you think of that?
Well, I would rely on the manufacturer's recommended adhesives for this, because certainly they're used to working with the concrete. I would be concerned that if I put down a standard concrete sealer that it would have an adverse effect with whatever adhesives being recommended by the manufacturer. So I would trust them on that. You know, if it was a floating floor and you wanted to reduce moisture, then I wouldn't have any issue with you putting down a concrete sealer first just to kind of stop some of that evaporation up. But since you want to glue the planking to it, and then I definitely think you should rely on the product that's provided by the manufacturer to do that, because you're talking about chemistry here and you don't know what's going to happen when you mix sealer in with the adhesive. It may affect its bond, and that would be a big issue.
Okay, so before we completely throw in the towel on the wood flooring, are there any wood floor options you think that remain open to us?
No, you've got it. The engineered wood floor is the only wood flooring product that you can put against concrete slabs. And look, it might be fine, it might not, but I don't think it's worth the risk. Yeah, I really think that if you get some of these new vinyls down, I mean, there's one other option, by the way, that's more expensive and incredibly durable and also very good looking. That's called Wood Look Porcelain Tile. And that can be glued directly to the concrete slab, and it's absolutely the most durable wood look product that's out there. So take a look at that as well. And if you have the budget, that's another option for you. Okay.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your opinion and letting us know our options.
All right. Thanks so much for calling the Money Pit. Hey, now that it's officially spring, I know it doesn't feel like spring everywhere. I'm sort of setting my sights for summer. And to me, one of the things that makes me really enjoy the outside season is a thick, beautiful, lush green lawn. Now, there's one thing you've got to do to get that, and that's get rid of the weeds. So just ahead, we're going to get step-by-step tips on how to do just that from landscape expert Roger Cook from This Old House.
And today's edition of This Old House on the Money Pit is brought to you by Lumber Liquidators, where you can get the latest spring trends and hottest styles in bamboo, laminate, wood look tile, vinyl plank, and hardwood floors for less.
On the Money Pit Radio Show. Pick up the telephone, fix up your home sweet home by calling 888-MONEY-PIT.
Everyone should know that drinking water is important to staying hydrated and healthy. Having safe, clean water is the last thing you want to worry about, but unfortunately, according to extensive research by the Environmental Working Group, 3 out of 4 homes in America have harmful contaminants right in its tap water.
That's why we are thrilled to be working with AquaTrue. AquaTrue purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers work with no installation or plumbing. It removes 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters and is specifically designed to combat chemicals like PFAS in your water supply. And they have water purifiers to fit every type of home, from installation-free countertop purifiers to higher capacity under-sink options. They even have a Wi-Fi connected purifier and mineral boost options.
And its proprietary purification technology is independently tested by IAPMO to NSF and ANSI standards to remove over 80 of the most harmful contaminants, including chlorine, fluoride, arsenic, PFAS, known as forever chemicals, nitrate, and many more. I can truly taste the difference when I compare it with my old water filter. AquaTrue saves you money also. Just one set of filters from their classic purifier makes the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. That's less than 3 cents a bottle. Plus, you'll save the environment from tons of plastic waste.
AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and even makes a great gift. And today, Money Pit listeners can receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to AquaTrue.com, that's AquaTrue.com, and enter code MONEYPIT at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue water purifier when you go to AquaTrue.com and use promo code MONEYPIT, MONEYPIT.
The Money Pit is presented by Home Advisor. Find trusted home improvement pros for any project at homeadvisor.com.
Making good homes better. This is The Money Pit. I'm Tom Kreitler.
And I'm Leslie Segretti.
Hey, what's your how-to or decor question? Come on, we know you got one. Call it in right now or post it to the community page at moneypit.com. The number is 1-888-MONEYPIT, presented by Home Advisor. Hey, they make it fast and easy to find a top-rated home pro you can trust for any home project.
Well, we all love a lush green lawn, but sometimes what's green isn't exactly grass, nor is it very lush. In fact, weeds can destroy a lawn and remove any chance of turning your backyard into a perfect putting spot.
Well, that's right. But when you consider that just one dandelion plant could make up to 15,000 weed seeds, it's a wonder any of us win the battle against these green invaders. One guy that can, though, is Roger Cook, the landscaping contractor from TV's This Old House, and he's here to tell us both how to rid our lives and our lawns from weeds. Hey, Roger.
How are you?
We're well. This is an ongoing battle that many homeowners face. What's the best way to control weeds in your yard?
It's a battle from spring to fall. It's not one product you can put down once that'll take care of everything. So,
and it's not just what's growing in your yard. In fact, you're trying to keep out all of the dandelion seeds that are floating around the atmosphere from everybody else's lawn, correct?
What is it? One dandelion can put out 15,000 seeds, which become airborne and can spread and spread and spread.
I had no idea that something so adorable, that's so fun to pick up and collect as you find them, could be so infectious, if you will, those dandelions.
Yeah. Well, that's how all weeds spread. They all have to have some mechanism which puts them into your yard from the neighbor's yard. It's a great thing nature designed.
So how do you go about finding the right product to get rid of that right type of invader, if you will, for your lawn?
Because it's not just dandelions. There are lots of different types of weeds.
There's a gazillion, at least a gazillion.
Yeah.
Identify the weed. If you have to, you can go to a garden center and bring it with you, and they'll tell you about the control you can use for it. The other is, the stronger the lawn is, the less weeds it will have. So keeping a good, healthy lawn that's cut long will really help. There's a couple of different ways I control weeds. There's a real problem with crabgrass. And the areas are going to be the same consistently over and over and over, because it usually grows in areas that dry out.
Okay.
So you can put down a pre-emergent, but you don't have to put the pre-emergent on the whole lawn. Crabgrass doesn't grow on the north and the west side. It only wants a real sunny part. So you just treat the area where it was. Now, that particular pre-emergent has to be put down just as a forsythia is flowering. That's our key to knowing that the ground is now warm enough that crabgrass is starting to germinate.
And the forsythia is also known as the goldenrod, for people who might be confused. It's that long, branchy shrub with the yellow, spiky. They're
very,
really
very early in the season.
Early
one of the
May.
First of them. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, is there a single herbicide that's going to work on all of these weeds, or do you really have to go on a sort of a case-by-case basis?
Case-by-case basis. You have to be really careful. When you buy an herbicide to spray on your lawn, you have to make sure it's labeled for lawns. There's a lot of herbicides out there that will kill weeds, but they'll also kill your grass. Okay, and that's happened to my friend quite recently. He showed me all the nice little spots in his backyard and said, "What happened?" I said, "What did you spray?" He showed me, and I said, "You just used a killer that's indiscriminate. Whatever it touches, it kills." But if you can go around and spray individual weeds with a small sprayer, you can cut down your use of herbicides by over 90% instead of putting it on parts of the lawn, again, where there's no need of it. So by using a liquid and spending a little time and walking around and spraying the weeds, and if you can get them as they're just emerging, that's when they're most susceptible to the herbicide. You can control it pretty easily that way.
And you have to be very careful of overspray when you do that, especially if it's windy out, correct?
A little trick I use is I take a funnel and I cut it, and then I clamp it to the end of my sprayer. That way there, the cone is going to keep it from spraying out to the sides too far, and you literally can just put the cone over the plant you want to spray and spray it and then move on.
Cool. So you sort of trap the weed under the cone, spray it, move on. You've only sprayed what you wanted to do. No overspray, no worry about taking out good grass, for example.
Works perfectly every time.
Is there a good place to go if you're just completely stuck and can't identify the weed and just don't know what the best plan of attack is?
A good garden center should have someone there who can help you identify the weed. Again, you can't treat the weed until you know what it is. Then you can get the right formula to help you get it under control.
Now, what about a sort of a chemical-free way of treating weeds? What about weed barriers and things like that? Do they help?
Physical barriers, you mean, like weed block and things like that? They do a little bit. I've had people put down newspapers and then put mulch on top of it, and that'll help keep the weeds. But what I find is that the weeds that aren't in the lawn and are in your beds, they tend to get into the mulch and germinate from the top. So those are the ones that you have to, you can spray those, but you got to be very careful of your shrubs and your ground covers at the same time. Sometimes it's a lot of fun to just go out with the kids and pay them a penny a weed and pull them out all that you can.
Roger Cook from TV's This Old House. So this is a battle you can win.
You can win. You just got to stay on top of it.
All right. You can catch the current season of This Old House and Ask This Old House on PBS. For your local listings, visit thisoldhouse.com.
And This Old House and Ask This Old House are brought to you on PBS by The Home Depot. Just ahead, have you ever pulled out gross dishes at the end of a dishwasher cycle? You know, the kind that remain layered with last night's dinner? The problem might be the way the machine is loaded. We'll tell you what you need to know to make sure they come out clean every time after this.
You live in a money pit.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off
my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin Marshall credit card bill.
The Money Pit is presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Making good homes better. Welcome back to The Money Pit. I'm Tom Kreitler.
And I'm Leslie Segretti.
And whether you're buying, selling, or just enjoying your home, we are here for you every step of the way. Call in your home improvement or decor question right now to 1-888-MONEYPIT, presented by Home Advisor. The fast and easy way to find the right pro for any kind of home project, whether it's a small repair or a major remodel. And if you give us a call right now at 888-MONEYPIT, we'll also toss your name in the Money Pit hard hat because we're giving away one of our favorite tools. It's the iconic American-made Arrow T50 heavy-duty staple gun and a supply of staples worth $50. This is the go-to tool for so many projects around your house. You're going to love it. There's so many things you can do, including upholstering a headboard, which happens to be a project on the arrowfastener.com website. Check that out. You have all the instructions you need. That Arrow T50 heavy-duty staple gun and the staples going out to one listener drawn at random. Make that you. Call us now at 1-888-MONEYPIT, 888-666-3974.
Heading over to Illinois, where Ron's got some stuff going on at his Money Pit. Tell us what's happening.
Thinking about building, and I'm looking at exterior walls, and my question is, should I consider 2x6 or 2x4? And I'm getting different opinions, and so I'm kind of wanting to see what you guys think.
So the reason that you would go with a 2x6 is so you can have more insulation, right?
Well, supposedly, yes.
But you could also have more insulation if you used spray foam versus fiberglass, because spray foam has a much higher R value than fiberglass. So you could use a 2x4 wall with spray foam in those walls instead and have a much better insulation package when you're all done and probably spend less on the lumber.
What would you think about the 2x4 with the 1-inch styrofoam sheeting on the outside with fiberglass inside and then your drywall?
Yeah, well, you can do that. I mean, all the insulation you add is going to help, but there's just nothing better than spray foam when it comes to both insulating and air sealing.
What about the cost on something like that?
It's a little more than fiberglass, but the thing is, it's a much more efficient system. It's going to save you more money over the long run because it goes on really, really thin when they spray it, and then it expands. It has like 100 to 1 expansion ratio, so it swells up. And it basically seals all of the gaps. Go to moneypit.com and go to under listen and watch. There's a section on books and guides, and there's a free download there that we wrote some time ago on all the different ways to insulate a wall. And there's a lot of information on spray foam in that, including some pictures of my own house when we applied spray foam to a very old house and just been thrilled with it. Just very, very happy with it.
Yeah, you've been saving a ton of money.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Excellent. I'll do that. Thank you very much.
Well, have you ever pulled out dishes at the end of your dishwasher cycle? So you're expecting everything to be clean, but you open that door and all you see is a steamy mess of things that are still layered with, you know, whatever you ate last night for dinner. Well, that problem could be the way the machine is loaded. So here are five things to check.
Right. So first, you want to note the water flow pattern. You want to check out where the nozzles are and the position and the width of those spinning sprayers. And think about what might cause one dish to block another. See, once you know where the water's coming from, you can strategically make sure you're not blocking that important spray function.
The other thing is, and I have to always remind my mom of this, is she'll put a big pan so that it butts up next to the little door that pops open with the detergent in it. And so it won't actually pop open. And you won't actually get the detergent in there.
Yep.
So nothing gets clean. So you got to look for that as well. Another thing is I think everybody is just overpacking the dishwasher. You know, you have to have gaps between things. Water has got to hit every surface of the dish in order to get them clean. It makes sense, but you don't want to hand wash the dishes. So you're cramming everything in right next to each other. And that's only going to guarantee a dirty mess. So try to keep a gap between every item and every other item so that the soap and the water can actually jet past and get onto all the surfaces and actually do its job, you know, clean them.
You also want to choose those racks carefully depending on the types of dishes you have. So if you've got concave dishes, you know, like bowls and cups and pots and measuring spoons, they can form a catching surface that's going to stop both the vertical and that horizontal water from getting around and over them. So don't put them on the bottom tray. Put them in the top tray so they don't block the water from below. Otherwise, the water is never going to get up to the top tray, which means all of those cups and bowls that are up there are going to stay dirty.
Yeah, that's a smart tip. You know, I never think about that one, and I tend to put some of the larger pans down on the bottom, but that's not really helping me at all. Now, when it comes to your silverware, guys, try to pre-soak the silverware before you actually put the utensils into the dishwasher, because that's going to loosen up any of that dried food that gets stuck between the fork tines. And when you load the silverware into the dishwasher, do so with the forks, tines pointing up, spoons pointing up, handles down, the knives you want to point down for safety, obviously. I like to sort them into the compartments with forks, one in one little spot, and spoons in another, and knives in another. This way it's easier when I'm putting them away. But just do it that way. Don't overcrowd them. You know, maybe stick to like four or so utensils per each little compartment. This way they don't get, you know, jumbled up on top of each other and everything gets clean.
And finally, you do want to pre-scrub the, what should we call it, the baked-on crud. Scrub your crud, all right? There's only so much the swishing water can do. And certainly if you get food particles into the dishwasher, that's okay. But if it's baked on, it's never going to come off. So you got to pre-soak or pre-scrub any of the charred food so that it separates before it gets in the dishwasher. And this way the dishwasher can actually finish its job. Hey, all of these tips are from a brand new post we have on MoneyPit.com about how to load your dishwasher. So search it out on MoneyPit.com. Read the whole post. I think you'll find some more tips and tricks that will amaze your friends and fool your enemies and solve all of those. I think dishwashers is one of those things where people argue about, you know, how, what the proper way is to load it and whether or not you should use the heating switch. And, you know, you need hot water in it. You need
it's
cold water.
It's such a touchy subject.
It's a very touchy subject. So you can solve all of that, settle all those bets just by reading the post, which is online at moneypit.com.
I will tell you, Tom, New Year's, we had a couple of friends over and my friend Carrie came over and, you know, she's very put together, as am I. And I will tell you that the dishwasher was a little haphazardly loaded as we were cleaning up. And she looks at me and goes, I'm surprised you load your dishwasher like this. And I was like, oh, that feels so judgmental.
Man, nice. I thought you were going to tell me that you're all haphazardly loaded that night.
Hey, are you thinking about taking a trip? Well, we're going to have steps that you can take to prevent your home from being damaged while you're away after this.
You live in a money pit. Money pit.
The Money Pit is presented by Home Advisor. Find trusted home improvement pros for any project at homeadvisor.com.
Making good homes better. This is the Money Pit Home Improvement Show. I'm Tom Kreitler.
And I'm Leslie Segretti.
Pick up the phone, give us a call right now with your how-to question at 1-888-MONEYPIT or post it to the community page at moneypit.com, which is what Jack in California did.
That's right. Jack writes, we have a house on our property that is 105 years old.
Youngster.
No one is... I know, for your
house, our houses.
No one is living there right now, but we still have the plumbing and electricity turned on. What would be the best way to put this house in a vacant or storage mode to minimize damage while it's empty? That's a good question.
That's a very smart question. We like the way you think, Jack. So here's what you should be doing. First of all, you're in California, if you're in Northern
California. Now, this is different advice from somebody in California to somebody, say, in Minnesota.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I mean, even if he's in Northern California, you could still get frost damage there. So, if you're not going to be in the house, it's a really good idea to drain the plumbing system. And so that just means any water that's in the pipes, can't freeze and expand. And you could, I mean, you should definitely turn off the main water valve and that will stop any major damage. But if you do get a freeze and the heating system fails, this will stop the pipes from expanding and cracking and just start leaking out the water that's there. Or are you having this big surprise when you turn the water back on and now you got a sprinkler system that you didn't know you had because the water's like shooting out all over the place, including like through the light fixtures and the ceiling seams and all of that mess. So you definitely should drain the water. For the heat, if you do drain the water, you could turn it down to probably about 62-ish. And then what you also are going to want to do to minimize the chance of any risk is to go through the electrical breakers and identify what each one is and make sure you turn off non-essential circuits. So an essential circuit might be your heating system, but a non-essential circuit might be, you know, the outlets in the living room. Because the more circuits that you de-energize, the lower the risk that you could have an electrical issue result from that. So that's kind of the way that you want to deal with this, is to make sure that you have the water off, you have the heat set right, you drain the pipes, and then you minimize the electrical circuits that are on. And that's the best way to minimize any possible damage that could happen in the house while it's empty. I remember, you know, I spent 20 years in the home inspection business, and I remember one time doing like a, it was termed like a sort of a quick inspection before closing kind of a thing. You know, just, hey, swing by this house. It's been vacant. Make sure it's okay before we sign the paperwork. Sure, I go into this house. It's a bi-level. There is 4 feet of water in the lower level of this house. 4 feet of water.
They just didn't check for a couple of
the
days.
Pipe
like,
broke.
Did this happen instantly?
Yeah, it was like a utility company, or I mean, a reload company that you know, didn't pay attention. It was an absolute disaster. So, needless to say, those folks did not close on the house that day. So glad I got a chance to stop by. But that's what can happen in these vacant houses if you're not around. So, a really good idea to kind of protect yourself by, you know, turning off the utilities that could cause those kinds of issues. Water. Right? And electricity where you don't need it.
You know, I think in this case, because the house sits empty, you know, it's a really good idea to think about all these steps. But, you know, my family has that home out east on, you know, the North Fork of Long Island. And you remember, Tom, a few years back, we were away on vacation. The house usually sits empty in the winter. My whole family shares it, and a pipe burst. So it's a good idea to think about just turning off that water, whether you're away for a week, a weekend, or not in the house at all. It'll save you a huge headache later.
This is the Money Pit Home Improvement Show. Hey, thank you so much for spending this time with us. If you've got tips, you've got questions, you want to contribute to the Money Pit community online at moneypit.com. And if you've got questions and can't get through to us, you can call 24/7 at 1-888-MONEYPIT. We'd love to help you get yourself all good to go for those springtime home improvement projects. This is the season. You know, we always say it's the Goldilocks season. It's not too hot. It's not too cold. It's just right. So when you're getting ready to take on projects around your house, you can count on us to help. I'm Tom Kreitler.
And I'm Leslie Segretti.
Remember, you can do it yourself.
But you don't have to do it alone.
Thanks to State Farm for supporting this show and helping our listeners protect their businesses and lives. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.